Please listen carefully.
Hello and welcome to another episode of OMG Cyber. Yes, I've rebranded, slightly shorter, snappier name. I know it's only episode one. Last week's one was a teaser episode. However, this week we're going to talk about, drumroll please, insurance. Oh dear, I can see you all rolling your eyes right now, thinking, could he find a more boring subject to talk about? Can I go and find some paint to watch dry somewhere? Actually, it's quite important, and it is interesting, especially if you're actually trying to protect yourself from the major data breaches that have been going on. Okay, a quick disclaimer here, just to make it clear, I am not an insurance specialist, I'm a techie. With over 30 years of real-world experience in malware, so that's malicious code, over 15 years of ethical hacking experience, including social engineering attacks, and over 10 years of digital forensics, including incident response. As well as working for a large cyber insurer for over 2 years, where I worked hand in glove with the underwriters, the brokers, and the claim staff in understanding cyber risks, defences, and remediation. I also used to meet with customer CISOs, the Chief Information Security Officers, their IT security managers and risk managers, legal counsel, to understand their risks and processes, their procedures, their technologies, their business partners, their supply chain and cloud and outsource services. So I have a good understanding of exactly how insurance works from a cybersecurity point of view. And just to be very, very clear, these are my personal opinions based on publicly available data. For those of you that weren't here for episode 0.5, the teaser, this podcast is completely ad-free. That's right, no adverts, no sponsors. I'm not interested in those. I just want to have proper chat, interviews and news and share information with you. I personally think that adverts just get in the way of a lot of podcasts and I absolutely hate them now. I despise them. So if you want to support the show and you want to hear more from me, then you can make a donation via my webpage. Hello, housekeeping. So on the housekeeping front, there's not much to report. I have some more events that I will be doing in April and May. However, it's a bit early to actually publicise those, so that will probably wait till the next episode or the one after that. However, I did have some really nice feedback about the audio quality for the teaser episode, episode 0.5. Now, that was interestingly recorded directly using Anchor FM's own app and web interface. I wasn't overly happy with the quality of, certainly for the voice side of it, and it wasn't due to me having a cold or anything. So I've actually broken out my Behringer Zenix Q802 USB mixer desk, which I normally tend to use for YouTube videos. So all the audio, so all the narration is actually being pushed through that now. Hopefully that will be better quality. If you disagree, please let me know. I'm also using Audacity to actually record all the audio portions locally and then upload them to Anchor FM. Let me know what you think. So last week when I was talking about the VPNs, I got a little bit muddled. So this is my errata for that. So my apologies. I do understand what a VPN is. I actually use them all the time myself. So just bear with me. That was, if you like, call it teething troubles for the very first episode. Breaking news. A quick update on the Norsk Hydro incident from last week, which I was talking about in episode 0.5. The latest data that's come in that they are definitely covered by a proper cybersecurity policy, which is rather apt, as I'm going to be talking about that later in this show, and that the cost so far they've attributed to the attack in UK pounds is looking at around 25.6 million. Now, it's probably the case that they're policy, their limit with the insurer will not cover all of those costs, but their recovery is looking extremely positive. Again, they're being very transparent, so my hat's off again to Norsk Hydro. I'll put a link in the show notes about the latest developments, so where you can find out more. And one further update, it appears that the LockerGogger software actually has, as part of its deployment, a capability to find and kill quite a number of security tools. So another reason why you need to make sure your infrastructure is secured against this, because as I said last week, this is generally introduced via somebody hacking your infrastructure via an open port, which is unsecured, or a known vulnerability, or some other way in, rather than social engineering. As I mentioned in the last episode when the topic was around ransomware, if you haven't listened to it, I suggest you go back and listen to episode 0.5. There have been two recent cases reported where the insurer has declined to pay a claim in relation to the NotPetya attacks back in June 2017. Hit lots of companies. Despite what the press media has claimed, in both cases, the policy was a cyber policy, and the reason stated by the press media for the claim being declined was down to an act of war or hostile action, which is not the case, as you'll find out. From what I have found out, neither of these claims are in relation to cyber insurance policies at all. In fact, they are both related to property policies, which are, even with a cyber extension added on, not the same as a dedicated cyber policy. Very, very sloppy reporting, which doesn't help anyone. So, this has resulted in every person and their pet of choice making statements as such as, well, what is the point of buying insurance as the insurer will weasel their way out of having to pay? And there is no point in buying cyber insurance as I've seen what's happened to the claims from Mondelez and DLA Piper. Expecting wide-ranging expert cyber coverage from a property policy is like expecting wide-ranging expert health insurance from your house and contents policy. Not surprisingly, you will not get comprehensive health cover backed by experts in this area. It's a bit like expecting your gardener to offer health screening without them being a medical practitioner. A few days ago, a written statement was sent to SC Media UK, the owners of SC Magazine, in which Kylie O'Connor, the head of group communications at Hiscox, stated that the dispute we are in with DLA Piper is not about a cyber policy and has nothing to do with a war exclusion. So that just proves that the press were getting it wrong. I'll talk about this in more detail in the main section of this podcast. Stay tuned. However, in the case of Norsk Hydro, they do have a dedicated cyber policy and therefore are covered under that policy up to their limit and after taking into account any excess, waiting period and loss adjustment. Are you sitting comfortably? Do you have your popcorn? This is the main part of the show. Let's go. So what are the big problems at the moment with traditional non-cyber insurance is what's known as silent cyber. So this is a case where, you know, potentially there are cyber exposures that are contained within existing traditional property and liability insurance, which they are not implicitly included. So think of it, it's more of hinted at rather than actually explicitly included or excluded. So that's silent cyber. It's a big risk, and it's partly why we've been seeing some of the issues with the likes of the Mondelez case and the DLA Piper case. So these are a good example, potentially, of silent cyber. So this is a big issue. And back in January of this year, the PRA, that's the Prudential Regulation Authority, which actually has responsibility for overseeing insurance within the UK marketplace, sent out a letter to all the major insurers, basically telling them to get their act together because there was too many gaps that they needed to fill, which left their clients basically exposed to these types of issues where they are not actually covered. I'll add a link to the PRA letter actually in the show notes and also on the blog. So look out for that if you want to read the whole thing. So as an organization or a small business or whatever size business you are, how do you actually make sure you're not in the same situation that Mondelez and DLA Piper have been? So things you want to do is things like check the policy that you have is fit for purpose. Is it the right type of policy? Is it a property policy? Is it a casualty policy? Is it a D&O policy or a kidnapper ransom policy or a crime policy? You need to make sure that the policy fits what you want to cover. If in doubt, check with your insurer or broker. I strongly suggest that you ask your insurer or broker which scenarios or risks you are covered for by the policy. And if you identify gaps in your existing coverage, decide if the cost of taking out extra insurance is a good risk or benefit. Check that the coverage includes first response, forensics, legal and PR services. That you have enough cover for business interruption, including lost business and remediation costs. Also consider the brand reputational damage and knock-on customer effects, such as loss of trust. Check to see that the policy will cover financial fraud, such as business email compromise, fake CEO, fake invoices, employee fraud. If not, find a crime policy that includes this. Crime policies are not the same as cyber policies, as what they cover is different, or from a different perspective at least. I'll give you some examples later. Make sure that the limits, the waiting period and excess is suitable for your business needs. Don't go for the cheapest, especially if the insurer broker only asks 5 to 10 questions and doesn't sit down with your CISO, your Chief Information Security Officer, or IT manager or risk manager to discuss the answers afterwards. Very few questions can be answered simply yes or no. They are usually a bit of both, and the answer may vary across a typical organisation. And the questions being asked should vary depending on which industry you're in. So your broker or your underwriter should actually ask the right questions for the right industry, not just generic ones. Look at how long your system services can be down before you start to lose business revenue, including third party, supply chain, etc. Try to ensure that you have no single point of failure. I mean, that's best practice, come off it. Make sure that you have a business continuity plan and a disaster recovery plan and test them. It's no good having them if you never test them, as well as an instant response plan. If you don't have an instant response plan, you're going to be running around like headless chickens. And test those as well, doing tabletop exercises to make sure it works before you need it for real. Do the boring stuff, backups and test them, patching, identity management, including leavers and joiners. Train and test your staff about cyber threats, including phishing your own staff, not just via email, but also via phone, by SMS, etc. Don't just roll out the latest shiny toys, as they may not save you or help much if you're not doing the basics right in the first place. So here's a few examples of typical cyber breaches and other related attacks. Now, some of these will be covered by cyber insurance, or parts of them will be covered by cyber insurance, but others may not. So let's go through a few examples, okay? Imagine you're a retailer. You've been hit by ransomware, loss of business, and you need to pay for the decryption key because your backups have been encrypted as well. Would that be covered by cyber insurance? Yes, it would. It would cover not only the investigation costs, but also the remediation costs, as well as potentially paying off the bad guys to get the decryption key and to restore your systems. So you would be covered for that one. So imagine you're running an e-commerce, so you're a online shop, okay? And to the last few days, somebody has been doing a distributed denial of service. So they've been flooding your website with unwanted traffic, basically stopping your real customers getting to your site and buying things from you. So your site's effectively down. You're out of action, you're losing money, and you're going to wonder, now, am I covered by insurance for this? Well, the answer is yes, you are. You'd be covered by a cyber insurance policy to help you put in countermeasures to actually reduce the risk and to remove the problem. You'd also be covered for lost business. You'd also be covered for system recovery and any other similar costs up to your limit, excluding the excess and waiting periods, the same as any other time. However, if you were hit by a distributed denial of service attack because you didn't have a suitable countermeasure in place, a content delivery network or an anti-DDoS service in place, you can't expect the insurer to pay for that. They may, as a gesture of goodwill to get you back into business, but that would be considered what they call betterment. And therefore, it's a normal cost of business and you should be doing it anyway. Let's say the bad guys decide to target your company via social engineering. So they managed to socially engineer one of your members of staff to give them access or give them the credentials for the company bank account. Would that be covered under a cyber insurance policy? Well, certainly from the investigation side and the remediation side. Now, if the bad guys emptied the bank account, that might or might not be covered depending on the policy. It would probably be more likely to be covered under a crime policy instead. So let's imagine you are a manufacturer, right, or a defence contractor, and you've been hit by malicious code. Now, you report this to your insurer. The insurer will quite happily, under your cyber policy, do the investigation. And let me say they find not only that you've, yes, have been compromised and malware's there, they'll help you with remediation costs, etc. But let's say they also found that, by the way, guys, your designs have been stolen. Now, would that be covered under a cyber policy or not? No, not normally. So costs for intellectual capital being stolen would not normally be covered under either a cyber policy or a crime policy. However, there are some policies out there that will cover intellectual property theft, which is a completely separate thing altogether. And what about the newer threats, things like cryptojacking? Now, for those of you who don't know what cryptojacking is, I suggest you go and take a look at my blog. There are a couple of nice articles about that there, exactly how it impacts you. But would that be covered under your cyber policy? Well, certainly the investigation, and because your systems have been hacked or compromised, would be covered. But any extra bills from your cloud provider, say you're running on AWS or Google Cloud or Microsoft Azure or wherever, probably wouldn't be covered, because that is normally excluded. I'm only aware of one insurer currently offering cryptojacking coverage. And what about the very latest threat, the things that we call password spraying? Now, these are attacks against things like Office 365 accounts and G Suite accounts being targeted as ways to bypass two-factor authentication or multi-factor authentication. So these actually use old protocols such as IMAP and POP3 to completely bypass the authentication. So they're using passwords which have been stolen from other breaches and simply doing effectively a replay attack. Now, would that be covered by cyber insurance? Possibly, if you've got cloud extension. So if you're actually covered for outsourced providers such as Microsoft or Google, you may be covered. But in theory, the vendors themselves, the cloud providers, so Google and Microsoft, should also have cyber insurance in place or similar insurance to cover you. At the end of the day, just really remember that suffering a cyber breach has almost become the normal thing to happen now, and expected, as really not a day goes by when we hear about yet another breach, either new or historical. And a good cyber insurance policy can help you offset the risk and related costs of such breaches or incidents, and, you know, potentially save you being seriously out of pocket. One thing to be aware of, if you actually do have an existing policy such as a property policy, a casualty policy, kidnap and ransom, etc., or D&O maybe, is that if you actually have a cyber extension to that policy, that cyber extension will usually inherit the terms and conditions and the wording from the master policy, so, you know, the property policy, etc. So just be aware of that. That can make a difference, and this could be partially responsible for some of the issues that we've been seeing with Mondelez and DLA Piper. So one of the things I think that needs to happen and or change actually in the insurance industry, especially around cyber policies, is they need to be more inclusive. Now, at the moment, they're pretty, what we call broad, they have broad coverage. However, there are exceptions, such as I mentioned before with the crime policy. Now, if you're hit by fraud and there is no hacking involved, then usually that would not be covered by a cyber policy. So I believe that a lot of the cyber insurers have to start looking at having a consolidated cyber and crime policy with the same broad coverage. So, you know, to make sure that there are no gaps for people to fall down through. You know, crime is crime, whether it's through cyber or not. And likewise, a lot of crimes are actually facilitated through cyber. So it should include things like business email compromise, fake CEO emails, fake invoices, insider and collusion, and insider misuse as well. So where fraud is being done by an insider, that should be, I believe, should be now included in a cyber policy. And I'd like to see the insurance industry actually step up to this and actually offer that type of coverage with a nice broad wording. Mm-hmm. question of the day. So today's question of the day is, why do companies invest in cyber insurance? Or why do they buy cyber insurance, you know, given all the bad press? Well, there are lots of good reasons, but probably one of the most common ones is they want to have a way to offset the costs and the risk, give the problem to somebody else. Now, this can include things like hacking. So that includes external or internal misuse of systems. So, you know, your normal hacks, breaches, etc. Physical loss of data, such as things left on a train, back of a cab, or sending data to the wrong person, you know, where you're actually disclosing that type of data. That's covered as well, usually. Data corruption or erasure, so things like ransomware or some form of system failure. That could include the cost to recover or recreate the data, even paying for ransomware decryption keys where needed. Business interruptions such as distributed denial of service, as I mentioned earlier, ransomware, etc., including loss of business. So it's not just the cleanup costs, but also the potential loss of business. Costs for first response, your forensics, your legal, your PR are covered under the policy as standard, well, on the better policies anyway. So let's say, for instance, you're an online retailer or a bricks and mortar retailer, okay, or a hotelier, and you have a data breach and the bad guys steal card data. Now, under that, you would actually be investigated by the payment card industry, PCI. And if you are then fined because you're in breach of their standards, cyber insurance will quite often cover the costs of those fines and any other fines where they are legally allowed to pay them on your behalf. There's also other issues, things like legal or contractual requirements from certain industries or business partners. In some cases, the insurer will offer services, solutions or products to help you to actually improve your cybersecurity overall as part of that policy. So you're actually getting something to help you improve your security as part of a policy to cover you against data breaches, etc. And this is quite a good thing. So it's a win-win for the insurer and for you as a client. You also may find that you'll get coverage for things like cloud service, outsourced service providers, and even things like bricking, where, let's say, for instance, you have a piece of manufacturing equipment that you have to put a new piece of firmware on. And as a part of that, it actually effectively bricks the device. So the device is no longer functional. So coverage for that would be included in a cyber insurance policy where you actually have that module as part of that policy. And in some cases, not only will they cover first party damages, i.e. damages to you and to your equipment, to your infrastructure, to your business from a cyber attack, but also, let's say, for instance, you are hit by a piece of malicious code and by accident, that code then escapes to one of your suppliers or your business partners and impacts their systems as well. That would also be covered. And there are quite a lot of other things that are covered under a proper cybersecurity policy. So, you know, look at what you can find out there. There are lots of good policies around, some better than others. Don't just go for basic coverage. Look for a policy that has extra modules and extra services attached to it as part of it. You know, it's really about making sure that it covers your risks and your costs and make sure you can offset them at the right level for the right price. So one of the things I quite often get asked about with regard to cyber insurance is, well, the customer will say to me, well, let me see. So if I buy this cyber insurance, you're expecting me to have the best of breed technologies, processes, procedures in place. And the answer is no, they don't. They know that security is a journey, it's not a destination. So they understand and will price their coverage accordingly. Obviously, they want you to make sure that you're doing due diligence, but they're not so anal retentive that they make sure that you're doing everything perfectly, because there is no such thing as perfect security. Why is there no such thing as perfect security? Because you can do everything right, have all the right patching, all the right processes, the right procedures, the right technologies, well-trained staff, etc., and you can still have a data breach. That is why cyber insurance is really, really important in today's world. So I can hear some of you out there thinking, why is he recommending cyber insurance? Does he work for an insurer? Does he get a finder's fee for recommending products? Does he sell insurance? Well, the answer to all of those is no, I don't. I run my own business. I have actually worked previously for a cyber insurer, where I was actually responsible not only as a cyber security specialist, but I also trained a lot of the cyber underwriters, so they actually understood about cyber risk, about the technology, about the lingo, the right questions to ask, what were the right answers to expect back from a client to make sure they actually weren't just being fobbed off with some nonsense that because they didn't understand cyber technologies, that they would just swallow and accept at face value. And this understanding would allow them to price the risk accordingly. I mean, I also worked quite a lot with the claim department, so I actually worked with loss adjusters. Well, hopefully you're still with me, you're still awake, you haven't gone to watch some paint dry somewhere. You know, just to show you that, that insurance isn't boring, it is interesting. So those of you in IT, you need to be aware of this. Those of you that are CISOs, Chief Information Security Officers, or IT Security Managers, or IT Managers, you need to be aware of this subject as well. It isn't just for insurance folk. And those of you that are insurance folk, I'm sure you're going to pick some holes in my stories, my explanations. Feel free to email me or to drop me a note telling me where I went wrong. Okay? Just bear in mind, though, my disclaimer at the beginning of this episode. I am not an insurance specialist, okay? Please be gentle with me. I saw a very interesting article from Wired just this week stating that hackers are passing around a mega leak of around 2.2 billion records. And also, just before I went to publish this particular episode, there was a suggestion that there was another leak, another data dump of over 890 million, almost a billion user IDs that have actually been leaked. This is why it's exceptionally important now to make sure that you have unique user IDs and passwords for every site that you go on. And I know a lot of you are going to say, well, I can't keep track of all of those. Well, this is where a password manager comes into its own. And even if you don't use a password manager, try putting on two-factor authentication or multi-factor authentication, because when those services, if you actually have that enabled and the password is stolen, with two-factor authentication enabled, the bad guys can't get in as you unless they can find a way to bypass that authentication method, that second or factor. You know, it really is quite important. Now, yes, you can bypass two-factor authentication and multi-factor authentication. We've seen that, as I mentioned earlier in the show, where Office 365 and Google G Suite accounts are being compromised via what I would call a side channel attack. So using an old protocol, using IMAP and POP3, rather than going through the main application where you would normally get challenged with a second factor of authentication. So you need to be aware of it. It is a bit of a hassle, or a little bit extra time, put it that way, but it's not a major stumbling block. And there also are hardware tokens out there which you can use. So things with, like, you plug into your USB, or you can actually use NFC with a mobile phone, or low energy Bluetooth. There are technologies out there which can seriously enhance your security. So have a look at them. I will put a link to several blog articles on my site in the show notes so you can actually look at that. Got a question? Want to be a guest on the show? Come on, I know you want to. I don't bite honest. Feel free to contact me and let me know what your question is, and I'll do my utmost to actually answer it for you. If you've got a slightly different perspective on what I'm talking about, share that with me and the audience. Go on, I dare you. As usual, you can contact us via Twitter at @OMGCyberSec, via the contact form on our website at https://omgcybersecurity.co.uk, or via the voice message function on the Anchor FM app. Well, that's it for this show. I hope you've enjoyed it. Please leave us a review, and don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, ta-ta for now. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember to tell your friends, spread the word about this new podcast. Thank you.